this week, gold rallied amid the debt ceiling debate in Washington. Welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, with you for this September 26th show. Well, precious metals market manipulation remains a hot topic in the gold community, particularly in the silver market. This week, the CFTC dismissed the silver market manipulation case, so who better to discuss the important issue than Bill Murphy? He joins me with his inside scoop on the topic. Bill Murphy says that the Pyrrhic victory comes with a hefty price tag. The long-term cost to the manipulators will be much higher silver prices to the delight of aficionados. Then the ever-doughty Richard Doughty joins me in a somewhat quixotic discussion on the metal sector. Richard extols the virtues of sound money and makes a cogent case for a gold-backed currency. And Robert Ian shares his two golden cents, wrapping up the show. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Mostly sunny skies were seen over the precious metals exchanges this week. Investors added to gold positions on dollar weakness amid the debt ceiling-related political wrangling on Capitol Hill. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, the yellow metal added $11, ending at $13.36 an ounce. Silver gave back about a dime for the week, finishing at $21.78. Neither gold nor silver is currently backdated on the NYMEX exchange. In related news, gold and silver prices received a boost on news of an impasse in the U.S. budget negotiations, increasing the risk of a government shutdown. Gold surged to a record intraday high over 1,900 an ounce after the last debt ceiling debacle in 2011. The U.S. debt ceiling is currently on course to be passed in October. Measures passed through the House of Representatives on September 20th. The Senate promoted an emergency spending measure after one overzealous legislator performed a 21-hour filibuster, putting the vote in abeyance. The next fiscal year begins October 1st. The last time a similar debt ceiling occurred was over 2 years ago, and as I mentioned, gold climbed to the highest point in U.S. history on September 6th, 2011. Nevertheless, officials always seem to solve the dilemma near the deadline, temporarily assuaging fiscal challenges. Bipartisan politics continues to be fervid, with each side taking an implacable position. The U.S. Senate voted Friday afternoon to approve legislation to keep the government open until November 15th, but the bill must now return to the House for action, so a shutdown is still a real possibility. Comments from Chicago Federal Reserve President Charles Evans Friday boosted gold prices, suggesting that the monthly bond buying program could remain on track until next year due to lackluster economic conditions. The Fed official noted that the tapering would occur in January, perhaps instead of October. On Wednesday, the U.S. Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, announced it had closed its investigation into the silver markets. Complaints of manipulation in the sector were completely dismissed. Bill Murphy discusses the ruling in our upcoming discussion. Bottom line on precious metals. Well, the U.S. dollar continues to hold tenuously beneath a head and shoulders neckline pattern. If current support fails, investors will likely pile into the precious metals. So for the moment, traders are waiting for an amicable solution to the debt ceiling issue. Since this too is expected to pass without incident, temporary selling could come to pass. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies appeared over the equities markets. Investors booked some profits on the Dow and the S&P, choosing the sidelines ahead of the debt ceiling showdown slated for next week. By the closing bell, the Dow Jones Industrials retreated by about 1.25%, nearly 200 points, finishing at 15,258. The S&P 500 shed 18, 1%, ending at 16,591, while the NASDAQ fared best, adding 7 points, ending at 37.81. Meanwhile, in U.S. economic news, the debate over Fed tapering is becoming somewhat intense. Many expect a small drop in QE stimulus in a few months, while others are less sanguine over the prospects. Driving the dialogue, a report showing that U.S. jobless claims dropped unexpectedly, boosting speculation that the Federal Reserve could soon scale back stimulus. According to the Labor Department, initial weekly jobs claims unexpectedly declined to 305,000 on Thursday, economists had expected an increase from the prior week. In addition, national output is somewhat more sluggish than anticipated, plus U.S. pending home sales fell 1.6% in August, lessening further the case for Fed tapering. Elsewhere, the Transmontane Partners, TLP, is a refined petroleum products terminaling and pipeline company based in Denver, Colorado. We've been following it for some time. The technical trend improved somewhat this week. According to DCF analysis, the stock is still undervalued by nearly 100%. Shares appear to have found support at the 50-period moving average, suggesting an advance to a new high of 80 may be in the cards, so wait for the river card. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, last week I warned of an increased odds of market sell-off due to weak technicals and overzealous sentiment. The selling came to pass this week, and sentiment has subsequently dropped sharply and is far less frothy. Nonetheless, the technical situation has not quite improved. For the rest of this report and all the stock picks, please log into your AlphaStox newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Bill Murphy and Richard Daughtey. So hang on to your iPods and iPhones. More portfolio profit building info is on the way. Stay with us here at GoldSeek. It's time to open up the listener mailbag where I tackle email questions and comments. First up, Kevin says, Chris, I just listened to your interview with Peru Saxena, and I think I agree with you on this one. My cycles work in gold and silver indicates a bottom in October of this year, so I believe we're probably in line for one last downturn. I have also noticed a lot of the gold bulls recently have gone bearish, and this could be a classic sign of a bottom approaching. We are in the equivalent of the gold bull stage of 1971, when the dollar was removed from the gold standard. We shall see a peak probably in 2020. Well, hello, Kevin. Think it is interesting from a contrarian perspective, many of the gold bulls turning somewhat bearish, and I do think your cycles work sounds interesting. In my book, Wealth Building Strategies, I point out that trends are simply long cycles in much higher time frames, so from a fractal perspective, a trend is a cycle. Now, at the risk of coming off as maybe overly pedantic here, here is a colloquial example. Assume that silver is in a downtrend on the daily chart, but in the weekly and monthly charts, the trend is solidly bullish. So you could argue that the bullish trend we see is an up cycle in the long term, punctuated by the occasional down cycles in lower time frames. The fundamental factors supporting higher precious metals prices are also profound, I think, including dollar weakness. The dollar has had every chance possible over the past 3 years to rally, yet it is still range-bound, basically in the same position as it was over 3 years ago. Now, the near-term picture is very weak, with a possible head and shoulders breakdown forming. Demand for the metals is red hot around the world. Investors are scrambling for metals at discounted prices. They know intuitively that real money is on sale. Now, what they may not know is why the real money is on sale, and that, I think, is the handiwork of the central bankers who are artificially holding the metals low with paper derivatives. So millions of global inhabitants are taking advantage of cheap prices, knowing that it can't last forever. And this is not rocket science, it's just basic arithmetic. Look at John Q. Public. Punches the time clock every day. At the end of the month, has a few dollars left over to pay the mortgage, gasoline bills, heating, and related bills and groceries. The portions on everyday items at the store and grocery are decreasing. The prices are staying relatively the same or inching higher. That's an interesting phenomenon. Reducing the portion size, holding prices steady, prices move higher. Half of America is living from paycheck to paycheck, lulled to sleep with a six-pack pizza and their favorite sitcom. Then, like a thief in the night, the grid goes down. There's nothing in the pantry, no solar panels, no bags of junk silver coins, no access to ATMs, no more gasoline in the gas stations, generators run dry. What will most folks do? Could we really be 3 days away from anarchy? Well, due to just-in-time delivery systems and poorly informed people, my guess is we may just be, and that will also be a big subject in today's segment here, but I do digress, so more on the grid failure and preparations in a moment. Now, in summary, I expect a retest of the summer lows in gold and silver, and if 1170 gold, and 1830 silver holds I expect to see on a weekly and particularly a monthly closing basis, then an assault on resistance. As listeners know by now, gold resistance is around $1,525 and silver resistance $26. Once those hurdles are cleared, expect every technical trader in the world to re-enter the bullish camp. The shorts will run for cover, but it will be too late. They never dug foxholes. If support fails, which I view as the least likely scenario, but one we must be prepared for, then a retest of 1,000 gold and $10 silver could be possible. But, you know, this is not a prediction, just decision tree analysis. I'm currently a buyer of silver under $20 an ounce and heavily interested at any level below that. As for the grid down situation, now please keep in mind this is just speculation, but I think the word on the internet and survival chat rooms is to prepare for a long-term grid failure event in a widespread scale. Most people think they can rely on their gas or propane powered generators. I have two 2000 watt generators, but I doubt that there will be any gas left over to keep them running for long. If you do wish to store gas, I recommend PRI-G, P-R-I-G. It's the best gas stabilizer there is. In fact, some folks have claimed they found cars in the woods sitting idly for years abandoned, and they added PRI-G to the gas tanks and used every gallon without any trouble. It's twice as expensive as the leading brand, but I think well worth it. Still, even with a few gallons of properly stabilized fuel, the generators can only run a few days to weeks max. What happens if a solar storm or EMP blast crushes the grid? What about civil strife or a terrorist attack? I continue to promote a solar backup system as the best line of defense. Keep in mind, though, that an EMP or a solar flare could burn out the diodes in your solar panels. In the junction box on the back of solar panels, typically have 2 to 3 diodes. You might want to keep a backup soldering iron. I have 2 soldering irons, one as a backup unused, as well as backup diodes to replace in the event of an EMP strike or, as I said, a solar flare. Now, currently, the tax benefits of solar panels are huge. The federal and state tax breaks can cover more than half of the upfront costs. The peace of mind, I think, of having a battery bank of deep cycle AGM sealed, no leak, no maintenance golf cart batteries wired in parallel for 12 volts, I think, is ideal. A simple MPPT 30 amp charge controller can now be purchased for as little as $50 on eBay. And these used to cost anywhere from $200 to $1,000. It maximizes your solar production and protects your batteries. 10 100-watt solar panels can be stacked against a wall in your garage, pre-wired and carried out in just a few moments, put in a sunny location, and Bob's your uncle. You have 1,000 kilowatts of maximum production, actually more if you have a very sunny spot and solid wiring. Then when trouble passes, you can simply carry 2 at a time back into the house and stack them neatly against the wall, taking up less room than a few plastic totes. In a true Teowaki situation, or that's the end of the world as we know it, you don't want noisy generators alerting the neighborhood that you are the one rich guy on the block who prepared, do you? I mean, solar panels are quiet, they can be easily hidden. I've seen preppers discuss how they will barbecue all of their meals. Really? How far will the smoke and aroma of your filet mignon carry? 2, maybe 3 neighborhoods? Hope you don't receive a friendly knock at the door late at night or something worse. You know, solar power with a simple inverter can run everything from a convection oven to a simple and cheap electric stovetop or microwave. Plus, a small battery bank can run your television, TV, radio, laptop. We just purchased a $33 handheld rechargeable ham radio, and it's the closest thing to a cell phone when the system goes down, but there's no monthly fees, and it is rechargeable, so you plug it right into your battery bank, communicate with people around the town, around the county, around the state. $33 for a ham radio station? I mean, these are the types of things that battle cruisers used to have in World War II. It would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, then tens of thousands, and then recently down to a few hundred, but now $33? Every family, I think, should have one, and if you have friends and family, you can buy one for each household. If it sounds extreme, talk to someone who lives in rural Alaska. Virtually every household is required to have a similar handheld device when someone gets in trouble. They don't have cell service. They can't afford telephone services most of the time, but they all have handheld radios. Neighbors barter, sell, and donate and keep in touch this way. The most cogent point, I think, for owning solar power is that it provides peace of mind for you, your family, no matter what. Let me give you an example here. What will you do when the generators run out of fuel? Of course, you can just run down to the gas station, right? Well, maybe. What if there are lines wrapping around the station and halfway across town? We saw this occur in the mountains near Asheville during the Katrina episode. You know, 1,000 miles away from the impact zone. Then even if there is gas available, well, I'll bet it'll be cheap. When Teowaki is extreme, folks will be irate. They could begin attacking vehicles, even taking pot shots with weapons. Roadblocks could be common. Maybe not a Mad Max Road Warrior scenario, but still something to think about. I mean, why is it so impossible to think that roving gangs are impossible? Look at that Mexican village in the news right now. Similar outcomes occurring in the modern world. Where are the authorities? Well, they might be hunkered down using their sick leave, protecting their home and families. Now, while these are clearly extreme circumstances, how could it hurt to be prepared? I suggest no matter how well times seem to be for everyone right now, by stockpiling canned goods and water, building a solar backup system doesn't have to be profound. It could just be a starter system. You can do a Harbor Freight starter system for less than $200. Buy a deep cycle battery from Walmart if you like. All right, thanks, Kevin, for that. All right, next, Daniel writes, other than aquaponics, which I know you favor, what would be the primary protein sources you would use to raise, cultivate for a farm which could feed 10 people? Well, hi, Daniel. You know, there are so many factors to consider with this question. I mean, what is the growing zone that you plan to use? In other words, is it warm or freezing in the winter? How many acres do you have to cultivate? Do you have greenhouses or do you plan to build a greenhouse? What is the health of your workers? Is the land fertile or rocky? Is it hilly or covered with trees or stumps? You know, after over 4 decades of gardening, and you know, my family can attest to this, it's one of my earliest childhood memories, I found nothing that compares with the humble spud. That's right. The potato grows virtually in any soil or light condition. It can be planted early in the season and mid-season again for a double crop. You can simply pull it out of the ground, wash it, pop it in the microwave for a quick meal. Now let's compare that with wheat for a moment. I love these preppers who buy huge bags of wheat berries and talk about how they will grow it and live off the bread and cereal. Right. Have you ever grown wheat? Well, I have, and it requires very fertile soil, endless sunlight, perfect water conditions. Otherwise, all you have is a pretty lawn. Next, you have to cut down the wheat berries and separate them from the husk with a sickle. Do you have a wheat grinder? No, they're not very cheap, not electric ones anyway. I have a manual grinder and an electric grinder I use to grind my family's corn. But for most folks, this would be impossibly difficult. I mean, you need arms the size of Arnold to grind any serious grain by hand. My point is, if you make a mistake with potatoes, well, you have some potatoes. They can store easily in the crawl space of your home. No refrigeration or processing is required. No, frankly, fertilizer is required. And here's the best part. Next season, if times are really bad, you can use the shriveled up, inedible spuds left over from the previous fall. They make excellent seed potatoes for your new season. Yes, I do have some Irish folks in my family, but few people know that the potato kept most of medieval Europe alive for hundreds of years. So I challenge you to find a vegetable that grows in such abundance that can give one that satiated feeling with so little preparation. Take a whole collard plant, for instance, saute it in butter or oil. Can you really live off of that day after day? I suggest that few people can, maybe only cattle or goats. Now, speaking of livestock, many people ask about raising cows, chickens, etc. However, what we've found is commercial feed, even the organic feed, is filled with heavy metals that eventually cause illness in not only the animals, but those who consume even the eggs. All commercial feed that we've tested meets this criteria. So here are my favorite survival plants in order of importance. The potato, obviously. Peanuts are interesting. Beans are phenomenally easy to grow in huge abundance. And lentils, their cousin. If you are not producing produce with a high quantity of protein, I would suggest it's just not practical for survival. All right, thanks for that, Daniel. I hope it helps a bit, and I know a bit long-winded. Next up, it's Rick from Calgary. He says he loves the show. In a recent discussion with Dr. Stephen Lieb, there was a place that we can go to search for alternative energy information. He's interested in looking into this, where he can go to see on the website. And by the way, he says, P.S., this is what I am looking at right now. Well, hi, Rick. You know, I'd direct you to YouTube as a great starter place to learn about solar energy. Most folks begin with Harbor Freight the three panel kits, less than $200 with a solar charge controller to charge up your batteries. I'd recommend starting there since it comes with a charger and two small 12-volt lights. Now, folks can get a feel at a very low cost through Amazon.com or eBay as well. My personal preference is for Renogy solar panels and the wiring. I like the quick snap-on and simple disconnect and the safety aspects of Renogy. They're also very reliable, and in my personal testing, it received more than 100 watts off of solar panels in extremely good conditions. We are talking at least 20 to 25 years of usage. What a wonderful thing. You're gardening photons. Think of it as harvesting the sun. So for more advanced novices, I'd recommend the Renogy starter kit with anywhere from 1, 2, or even 4 100-watt solar panels. And it also comes with the charger and sometimes with an inverter. I personally prefer nothing larger than 100 watts. Why? Well, because 100-watt panels are relatively lightweight, they're easy to move and to store and put on the roof. Anything larger is very unwieldy, quite heavy, requires surprising agility and dexterity to install. It's hard on the lower back, and there are some other dangers. I don't like anything less than 100 watts because, well, it's difficult to scale up to any meaningful current. Just remember to ground all solar panels with a grounding lug and at least 6 to 8 gauge bare copper wire. It's not cheap, pretty good price on eBay, with an 8-foot copper earth ground with grounding clip. Now, this tends to meet the code in most areas. I'd also recommend DC circuit breakers from Midnight Solar for both the positive and negative wires. I know electricians will write me and say, well, the positive wire has the most potential and it's all that's necessary, but I feel more confident knowing that any wire, even the grounded negative entering the premises, is protected via DC circuit breaker. This allows for more careful maintenance and shutdown of the entire system and complete blockage of amperage. I also prefer the external shutoff switch for firefighters to quickly turn off any external system. And I also like Midnight Solar's lightning arrestor for your DC and AC circuit boxes. Be sure to have a 250-watt DC breaker between your inverters and your battery and charger. Of course, I recommended the MPPT chargers for around $50 on eBay. Please keep in mind, none of this should be viewed as advice, just my personal opinion. It is, I think, an interesting hobby. But of course, if you're not a licensed electrician, I'd suggest having one help you set up your system. It just turns out that a family friend in my early days happened to be a licensed electrician, so you might say I had an inadvertent education at an early age. All right, thanks for that question. And next at bat, it's Darren from England. He says he's been a listener of the show since it started, and he really likes it. He says these questions are crucial, and he's positive they must be burning in other people's minds about the current economic climate. What will happen to the price of gold and silver when the derivatives bubble bursts? Will it just be the producers that survive, or will financial companies like banks and brokerage houses and clearing agents in the world go bust? Will everyone lose their jobs? If this is the case, will physical certificates and be worth buying? Well, hello, Darren. You know, there's considerable debate, I think, among the gold crowd regarding the derivatives question. Some will argue that the 1.2 quadrillion in notional derivatives, keep in mind now, that's 1,200 stacks of $1 trillion. Or you might say it's 1,000,000,000,000,000. That's right, 1,000,000 stacks of $1 billion. A little over, 1,000,000,000.2. Folks are saying that the 1.2 quadrillion in notional derivatives and nearly half a quadrillion with interest rate exposure could blow such a hole in the global economic system that massive deflation is inevitable and a global economic depression to follow. However, I propose that the parallel is a weak one at best. Firstly, we need to remember that the Federal Reserve was in place nearly two decades ahead of the Great Depression. Dr. Bernanke's study in this area of the Depression may be based on some false assumptions. The Fed and the central banks are mostly responsible for all of the major bubbles since 1913 and nearly all inflation. So the most likely scenario would be similar to 2008, where the wheels fall off the economic semi and the whole system runs off the precipice. The reaction from central bankers, I think, is somewhat predictable. They print like mad to prevent economic collapse. At first, the metals likely suffer somewhat, but as it becomes clear that all fiat money is suddenly worthless, the dash for tangible gold and silver begins as 7 billion inhabitants realize that they have been living in a collective fata morgana and the illusion is over. Nothing intangible has much of any value, and only tangible items are worth their salt. If this seems implausible, let me digress for a moment. I think we should base our conclusions not just on axioms, but more on empirical observations. Simply put, as a research scientist, a burgeoning economist, and statistician, I give considerable weight to conclusions based on actual, tangible observations and less on the conclusions, axioms, and definitions of others. I simply mean to say that all fiat currency systems have and always will fail. It's just as simple as tossing a ball in the air. We know that eventually gravity will overwhelm the force that led it skyward and it will tumble back to the earth. In similar fashion, someday, likely sooner than later, given the number of bail-ins and fiascos, gold and silver will again be viewed as real money. You know, here's an example. 5 years before the Weimar hyperinflation, a 1 ounce gold mark was worth, well, 1 mark. So you could purchase 1 mark of items with an ounce of gold around 1917, 1918. At the end of the hyperinflation, just 5 years later, that same coin, and I am not exaggerating here, had a purchasing power of 1 trillion marks. Now, I think there's several ways to illustrate the importance of this remarkable understanding. You could say that anyone who still had an ounce of gold could purchase a small city and was suddenly wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice. Or you could say that a wealthy man with 1 billion marks at the time in the bank, intangible goods, was suddenly worth 10 times less than a homeless man who found a golden mark. The walkaway point is that eventually only those with gold and silver bullion and coins, and perhaps legal title to gold mines through certificates, will have much of any wealth. All right, I want to thank you for your questions and comments. We certainly like to hear from all our listeners. If you'd like to call in your questions and comments, you can do so at any time. We have a toll-free hotline for you. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call in any time you like, and we'd like for you to jot this number down, please, on a post-it pad and keep it close to your phone or plug it right into your cell phone or telephone, 1-800-507-6531. That's the Gold Seek Radio toll-free hotline for questions and comments. 1-800-507-6531. Whatever's been keeping you up at night? Well, maybe you'd like to have a sound night's rest. Forget insomnia. You can put those worries behind you and put it on the air. 1-800-507-6531. There's more GoldSeek.com radio coming your way after these messages. Richard Dawsey, the Magambo, publishes the Magambo Guru economic newsletter online, and it's a pleasure to have his many decades of experience here. Welcome back, Richard Dawsey.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's wonderful to be back.
Well, you know, the top story in the past week or so affecting the market seems to be that FOMC yawn decision. You know, they just agreed to maintain their $85 billion buying spree of toxic debt, and apparently they're not as convinced about this nascent recovery they keep talking about. There's some dissension in the ranks, you might say, at the Fed. What do you think?
They cannot stop. It's just not possible for them to stop. They must keep going forever and ever and ever. That's the problem with a fiat currency built on such absurd fractional reserve banking requirements. Once you get started, so much money is owed versus how much money there is that if they stop creating it, that people can't pay their debts anymore. They can't even pay the interest anymore. So they have to keep going. There will never be a stop to this.
What exactly is the exit plan here?
There is no exit plan. That's the rub of the whole thing. There is no exit plan. You know, I spent an entire month going through Keynes's book on unemployment, interest rates, and whatever it is. I forget the name of it now. But there's no way to get out of it. They never mention it one time. Talks about incurring the debt. to provoke the animal spirits in people and get people back to work and all that heroic stuff. But there's never one word about paying it back. And the reason is you can't pay it back. The whole Keynesian argument was on stimulus spending was that it has a multiplier effect. You pay a man a dollar to dig a hole. The man who digs the hole takes a dollar and buys a dollar's worth of meat. The guy from the meat store buys a dollar's worth of bread. The bread guy buys a dollar's worth of clothes. And so there's $5 worth of spending where only one was spent. The problem is it also works in reverse. If you don't spend a dollar with the hole digger, he doesn't spend a dollar with the butcher. The butcher doesn't spend a dollar with the baker, and the baker doesn't spend a dollar with the tailor. And so that's the problem with the whole thing. It goes in multiplier in reverse, and that's why you cannot stop creating more and more money once you get started down this path.
At the risk of getting too esoteric, could also discuss the fact that there's considerable literature indicating that maybe none of this debt can truly ever be paid off at all. You know, if you look at the way the fractional reserve system is set up. Every time one person puts, let's say, $1,000 on deposit at a local bank, an additional $9,000 is created out of thin air. And this has a multiplier effect because those dollars can then be deposited at the same bank through other clients or additional banks. You might argue that the system is virtually doomed from its inception.
Well, you know, it is, and the way that it worked out in the past is all the money has been put into non-economic investments and malinvestments of one sort or another, and they're just wasting resources, and so a recession comes along, these investments go bad, everything goes to bust, freeing up all those resources to be used by other guys who are smarter and going to use them better, and the society rises from the ashes. But there has to be a big wipe out of all the people that invested their money so that the money can be wisely invested by somebody else. But the Federal Reserve won't let that happen. We never have Schumpeter's creative destruction. It just keeps on this bloated economic system they developed. They're trying to keep it going at all possible costs. And that cost is trillions of dollars a year in new money. Chris, I mean, every economist from Keynes himself admitted it. Keynes himself admitted that the stimulus spending would cause inflation in prices. But it was his idea that unemployment was worse than inflation, and Hayek, on the other hand, decided inflation was worse than unemployment. But we know who won the argument. Keynes won the argument. So everybody agrees that all this money is going to create inflation in prices.
The argument is, well, you know, 2-3% inflation per year, it doesn't hurt. Looks great on paper. That's in the virtual world. Over long periods of time, let's say 20, 30, 40 years, or even a generation or two, it really takes a bite out of savings. It takes a bite out of investment. It takes a bite out of virtually every aspect of society, not galloping or hyperinflation. What it seems to do is pull out the underpinning underneath the working and the middle classes and cause a very slow erosion likened to a sinkhole. So the house seems like it's on very sturdy foundation. And then, you know, as a resident of Florida, I know you're familiar with limestone erosion and sinkholes. And then suddenly you wake up and your neighbor's house is 20 feet underground.
I've always had a problem with anybody that says that a little inflation is good, particularly that Janet Yellen. That's one of our big selling points, is she thinks a little inflation is good for everybody. Well, let me tell you, if you got a bond you paid $1,000 for and it lost 2%, if interest rates go up by 2%, and inflation goes up by 2%, so interest rates will probably go up by 2%, you lost 2% of your bond and you lost another 2% of the other $980 you had left. You tell me how that guy losing money is good for anybody. I just reject that completely out of hand.
It's great for the politicians, though, you see, because...
For the banks who loan the money, because now they can buy that loan back and get a discount, yeah.
And it's good for the government, because all of those huge entitlement programs, suddenly the payouts are significantly lower. 2% on, let's say, $1 billion is some pretty good walking around change.
Yes, as far as the government goes, I don't see where a guy declaring a loss on his tax return and reducing his tax remittances is good for the government. The guy lost money, he's in a bad way, now he's giving less money to the government, and the government needs the money. I mean, how that's going to be good for anybody.
But you know, maybe we digress here. James Bullard said, he's one of the Federal Reserve Bank chairmen there at St. Louis, he says to expect a small taper, perhaps as soon as the next FOMC meeting in October. He said that the decision was a close decision. This ongoing improvement in the Labor Department could lead to some tightening by the Fed. Are you buying this rhetoric?
No, and I am angry that someone would lie to my face directly like that. The American economy is not going to recover. Employment is not going to go up. Interest rates are not going to go down. And the government's going to create more and more inflation, and which is going to drive interest rates up, which drives bond prices down, which means there's lots and lots of losses out there everywhere. The 10-year bond bottomed at about 1.5%. It's now almost 3%. Everybody owning a 10-year government bond is now showing about a 40% loss on paper. And these are trillions of dollars worth of bonds, and it reflects trillions of dollars worth of derivatives and trillions of dollars worth of other bonds and trillions of dollars worth of other things. Money is being lost now. There are people sitting on paper losses. They just haven't declared them yet. And they're hoping the Federal Reserve will create enough money to buy up so many bonds it drives interest rates back down, making them whole. But there are gigantic losses on sitting on books everywhere. Anybody that owns a bond, a 10-year bond, is showing a loss from 3 months ago. A big loss.
I'd also like to discuss the significance of a growing theme we're seeing throughout the global economy, bail-ins. I know people are becoming more cognizant of this threat to almost every aspect of savings and checking accounts. We've seen several forms of this. We've seen it take the form of rehypothecation, which is just one of those esoteric terms to describe when your brokerage firm essentially borrows your margin account and makes some shady deals, and suddenly no more margin account, and they say, didn't you read the fine print, i.e. MF Global? Essentially, that just means that they made a little boo-boo, and you're on the line. The governments have picked up the ball here and said, hey, this is a new, neat little trick. They first tried it in Cyprus, and they just did it again in Poland, which is kind of frightening. They said, hey, you know, we're going to say half of pension funds, drop a zero there. We're going to knock off about 50% because, well, the government's gotten itself in trouble, and after all, you are the government, you're the people, right? So we're going to borrow your pension funds, and many other nations, including Iceland, Canada, New Zealand, are also changing the verbiage there, and we're starting to see it even pop up here in the United States. I'd like your comments.
Well, bail-ins, it's one of those last-ditch desperation moves. If your bank goes under because they've taken all your money and frittered it away, your money's gone. The only hope you have is that they take your money and save the bank. So if your money is in the bank, your money's gone already. It's been loaned out and gambled away, and they're sitting on all these losses. And so instead of just telling everybody, hey, your money's gone because we gambled it away, no, we're going to bail in the bank, and that'll be everybody will be happy then. So yeah, it's a last-ditch desperation move. How willing are people going to be able to spend when their money's gone? Half my money's gone? Do you think I'm going to go out and buy a new car?
Well, you know, I think that leads me to the point here. Under such conditions where we're seeing this growing trend where, you know, there's the MF Global, Cyprus, and now setting the stage for numerous new bailouts the next time a sudden financial crisis circa 2008 comes along, and we know we can't be too far away, there's very little available to shield the investor from these obligations that are tied to their brokerage accounts, bank accounts. Anything in excess of the insured amount is now suddenly on the chopping block almost worldwide. That should be enough, I'd think, to put the fear of God into people.
But in America, we can print our own money, where in the EU, they really can't. They all have to go to the European Central Bank, and then they'll be squabbling among themselves. Well, why is Italy getting all this free money? Then why is Greece getting? Then the French want to know why. It goes on and on. So you can't do that very well over here. But over here in America, the Federal Reserve nearly pushes a button, gives the banks all the money they need. Don't you worry about a bail-in over here. That's a long way off.
Read recently that Italy, its largest bank, is now doing its own form of bail-in on its customers. Not to mention, we're now hearing that the Dutch bank, Amro, refused to deliver its gold bullion that it had promised its customers. If you look at it in the big picture, it's funneling, or it's almost a vortex leading to a singularity, which I can't help but think, of course I'm biased, makes a great case for precious metals. I'd like your thoughts.
Well, you know, I think what makes a better case for precious metals is the last 2,500 years of economic history of the world. This is nothing new here. Every government, there's been thousands and thousands of governments that have spent themselves into bankruptcy and tried everything they could to get their dig their way out, which included stealing everything from their citizens and stealing everything from a neighboring country by declaring war on them. This is nothing new. And what is the one constant in all that time? People that had silver and gold did very well. Everybody else did not. How can you argue with that? 100% of the time in the history.
Magambo, they didn't have iPods. They didn't have computers. We're smarter than them, right?
Oh, I so wish that was true. Hey, wait a minute. If that's true, I never thought about these ramifications. Thank you, Chris. It's a whole new line of...
All right. Well, as we wrap up here today, are there any other topics that I've missed? I'm sure there's a couple of things that you're watching closely on your radar screen.
No, I'm just watching the whole thing basically collapse because so much money is being lost and governments are being paranoid about it. And the people who lost the money, they're being paranoid about it, and they're doing everything they can in a desperation move to save their jobs. So that comes around to this money sloshing around. There's not enough money sloshing around, and now the Federal Reserve is going to make sure they have lots of money sloshing around. And even that's not going to be enough. Inflation is running about 8-9%. If you look at John Williams' shadow stats, who figures inflation the old-fashioned pre-Clinton way, inflation is a lot higher than that. Bonds are so grossly overpriced, they've got to collapse by at least half just to get back to within being reasonable, halfway being reasonable. And then when bonds go down, the stocks go with them. Who's going to buy a house when their stocks and their bonds have gone down? And their 401ks, that's what the 401ks and IRAs and people's retirement accounts are full of, stocks and bonds. And people are writing derivatives on stocks and bonds. It's a gigantic.
You've covered a lot of great bases there, and we recreate a similar metric to Shadow Stats inflation number, and you are right. A lot of folks think that it's the food and energy that makes the big difference, but in my calculations, food and energy is a rather small incremental aspect of the inflation differential. It really comes down more to housing prices. People don't realize that has given the artificial illusion of lower inflation because home prices have come back so far, but now that's starting to taper off as well. And I also want to address your housing idea that folks will stop buying houses. I mean, this is a very salient point. As interest rates start to rise, those mortgages become very expensive. And I wonder how many people have really thought this through. If interest rates continue to climb, just what will happen to the housing sector, which seems to be currently making up one of the strongest and most essential parts of the U.S. gross domestic product.
The funny thing about houses, I'm not sure what's causing it. My personal belief is that a lot of that money overseas is coming over here and buying up U.S. property at relatively cheap prices. And so it's Americans. I don't know if it's all that many Americans are buying.
What's going on is we're seeing hedge funds that focus entirely on buying up distressed properties and foreclosed properties, those with great potential. Think of it as a vacuum cleaner. They've been sucking up all of those low-priced houses since 2009, packaging them, then most likely selling them as mortgage-backed securities once again. What that does is it prices out all the little people out here who wanted to buy a house at 2008, 2009 prices. Now have to pay, thanks to the fact that they were packaged and mortgaged and securitized on Wall Street, we have to pay an extra 20, 30, 40, 50% that we shouldn't have to pay because they're artificially propped up. Richard Daughtry, we want to thank you today, and I want everyone to direct their browser to the Magambo Guru Report. Do you have any contact information for them?
Just the MagamboGuru.com, run by Junior Magambo Ranger Doug.
We'll hopefully have you back soon.
So it's always wonderful talking to you, Chris.
Murphy is at the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, with Chris Powell working on behalf of investors to expose the powers that be manipulating the precious metals market. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Great to be here, Chris. Thank you.
You know, I understand you have some big news regarding the ongoing silver investigation.
The CFTC, after 5 years investigating Morgan for manipulating the silver market, decided to drop it today, saying that there was no basis for them to go further. It took them 5 years to do this, which is beyond me, but it's really so egregious, because right now the Justice Department, and this is according to Morgan themselves, is investigating Morgan for market manipulation and wrongdoing in 6 different aspects of their business. And I think there's been 1 or 2 added since they announced that. It's unbelievable how they're being investigated by the Justice Department. So, and the CFTC investigation in the silver was probably the most obvious one of all. I mean, GATA testified, thanks to Andy McGuire, in front of the CFTC over 3 years ago with emails about their investigating it. There was 2 more whistleblowers that surfaced last year that talked about J.P. Morgan's trading in offshore accounts, manipulating the market. One guy got so afraid he moved to China. I mean, they have it all. But as GATA said, we're not surprised in the slightest and expected this because, as we have long claimed, the manipulation of the gold and silver markets is partly a government operation. The CFTC is investigating their own bosses. The fact that they wouldn't come up with anything is par for the course.
Do you suppose that silver might be a victim of its own diminutive size relative to other markets? I mean, for instance, the entire silver market can't be as large as just one single Dow component.
Well, that's a good point, and that's obviously the case. And the reason they're manipulating silver market, would say, who would care, because it's looked as money like gold is. And way back when they decided to get into this price suppression drills and scheme, they realized they had to manipulate silver as well as gold, because the dichotomy of one doing one thing, one doing the other, wouldn't work. So they got involved heavily into manipulating the silver market for that reason.
It makes you wonder what they're thinking, though, because even the Rothschilds, who were known as the world's experts of the precious metals markets, they got out of the business, you know, about a decade ago.
Well, that was a good point, because they're very smart people, and what they did was get out of the fixing business, which they were part of for hundreds of years in London, and they knew all about the price manipulation. They knew it would eventually fail. They knew the price of gold and silver were going to take off, because I think when they got out, the gold was something like $460 or something. It went up to nearly $2,000. So they knew what was coming, and they think big picture, longer term. They know it's going to be a big scandal someday, so they just said they washed their hands of it and walked away.
They were heavily involved in the market back to the times of Napoleon. I mean, they were cornering the British bond market and selling precious metals, I believe. As Waterloo was announced, their couriers gave them the information something like 12 hours ahead. In a Bloomberg.com survey, 64 economists expected the Fed to taper. Fed officials, they obviously know something the rest of us suspect. What do you think?
They don't like to jerk a lot of their people around, so to speak, in terms of setting things up. And they had to be petrified to take it with this tapering situation. They left it alone and stunned everybody. And what it says is just really how what they've done hasn't worked to what they need to do yet. The economy in the U.S. is on shaky ground. Even today, Walmart started making noise about disappointing sales, and there's a lot of things turning. And this is after pumping all this money into the system, although a lot of it, as we know, has not gotten in the system. So it just shows you how really difficult situation they're in, and it explains why over the past year the Dow, gold has been killed while the Dow keeps going up on the same tapering situation. So they're petrified of something. They're petrified of higher rates. They're petrified of what the dollar could do. They're scared of some kind of black swan derivative event. And that's why they've been all over the gold market.
Shift gears to the silver market. You know, demand remains incredibly strong despite lower prices. We're seeing record demand from retail and high net worth buyers. They've consumed 15% of the total world silver production. That's 120 million ounces of the 787 million total mined from 2012. The U.S. Mint reported record sales of silver coins. That's 33 million, over 1,000 tons already. That matches last year's total sales. The Perth Mint, the Royal Canadian Mint, near record sales again. And plus, sources show 144% leap in the maple leaf sales, 60% surge in the sale of silver maple leaf coins. What do you think? Is demand as hot as folks think?
Yeah, well, the big guys are out there for sure. I'm not so sure what the little guys are doing, because from a lot of sources I get, you know, they've backed off. Now, of course, demand from overseas is very strong. And, of course, it should be for what these prices are. They're artificially low. With gold, anything above 1,300 or down here, and you know, silver where it is, at, you know, 21, 22 bucks an ounce. I mean, it is retrospect to be seen as an incredible buy. So it's certainly a great time to be accumulating.
According to the COT report, commercials are once again covering their shorts. As we start to see them cutting back on their bearishness, the markets tend to find their footing, particularly in silver here. Do you have any comments on the COT report?
Well, the big one is that the open interest in silver has gone down from 166,000 contracts before the mid-April, what I call a financial terrorist attack, down to about 112,000. And meanwhile, as would be expected, J.P. Morgan, well, of course, there's no fixing, has been covering its short positions on the way down. So it's setting up for washing out the market and for a very substantial move to the upside, and it should occur this fall, or I'll be off base.
Well, I know you also keep an eye on the technical side of the markets, and the picture has been improving in the past 2 months. After this sluggishness passes, do you agree we're likely to see a retest of $1,525 gold and $26 silver?
Yeah, well, if I'm correct again, you know, they've pretty much washed this thing out to do what we mentioned earlier, why they took it down, and these prices are just way too low. And at some point in here, they're going to have to retreat again, and which is what they did, you know, after 2001, all the way up till, 2 years ago. And then, of course, it was just going to be a year ago soon when they started to bring gold out from 1,793, you know, back to below 1,200. So it's been quite a raid. We think they've gone through a great deal of their available central bank supply to do it. Everybody knows the Chinese are just buying the gold up. I mean, it's phenomenal what they're doing, and that increases every year, and it's a new demand item. So they've had to give up a lot of their gold to do it, and I think they're going to be forced to retreat again, and we should have a spectacular fall.
You know, it's a great point, because India is apparently going to pull back on some of their more stringent import laws against gold, because they were trying to repair their balance of payment with the very, very sluggish rupee, trying to support their currency there. And they couldn't curtail oil because it's the lifeblood of the economy, so they targeted gold. Interestingly, silver did skyrocket in demand in place of gold during that time. So they're pulling back on some of their import levies, if you will. So that's going to be, hopefully, an impetus for higher prices in gold. And then, as you say, China, you know, the amazing singularity drawing in huge amounts of gold, and once it crosses that event horizon, it's never seen from or heard again. It's illegal to export any sizable gold bullion from their shores, and we're hearing of record imports from Hong Kong into mainland China. Plus, they can hardly keep supplies of silver and gold on the new Shanghai Precious Metals Exchange. Unlike the COMEX, which it's like pulling teeth to get any gold off the COMEX, the Shanghai Exchange actually specializes in delivery, if you could imagine such a thing. It's an index, that an exchange that does its job. And they are delivering huge amounts of gold and silver. So it's certainly something to watch.
I think it's interesting that, you know, as you mentioned, the One, getting into the tapering thing, I reported as way before it happened, minutes now, that this thing was obviously the gold price jumped, and it was obviously people had inside information. There's been a big flap lately about this millisecond algorithm trade right at the time, but no, it's much bigger than that. Friday before the Lawrence Summers announced, all of a sudden, late in the day, gold moved. So it's just part of the corrupt nature of the gold market. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So what happened was, you had the tapering, gold goes up $70, and just like you mentioned, the Fed beat people who predicted what was going to happen. Everyone was caught offside in the trading world, except for those people that were able to get out of it right ahead of the announcement. And so that we're going into an option expiry today, and so all of a sudden these people were all exposed. And of course, with the taper, gold should have kept on going. Instead, they put in yet another raid. Gold was taken right back down to a low of 1305 yesterday. Allowed all these people to get out. They were caught offside, bailed them out. And now that it's ending, people had a chance to get out again this morning with a 1316 low. And then all of a sudden, now gold's up to 1335, 1338. Go right back up again. They let these guys out.
We were talking about this before the show, so just to give people the context. One of the largest moves in 2 years occurred right after the Fed announced no tapering in precious metals, particularly gold, ran up nearly 5% just after that move. And you pointed out, and they knocked it right down, and it just smacks of more manipulation.
We have never seen the gold cartel be as aggressive as they have been. We pointed out every day, Plan A, they sell around 3 a.m. New York time. They have the same kind of, they do the same maneuvers over and over and over again. And we still think they're going to be forced to retreat, but it's all being managed. And until it blows up, it's probably going to be managed.
As we wrap up here, maybe you could tell folks more about Gata.org and La Metropole Cafe. I understand that Chris Powell will soon be making an interesting and exciting trip into Asia to spread the gospel.
Yeah, he'll be out there spreading the Gata gospel in Asia and Australia, New Zealand, and leaves on Sunday. And I think he's going to be on CNBC over there with Bernie Lowe, too. And that should be a great trip for him and for Gata. People go to www.gata.org to check out what Chris is up to and what he sends out, and then they can go to La Metropole Cafe, which I've been doing for 15 years now, and they can sign up for a two-week free trial and see if what I have to say is of value.
Very good. Well, hat tip for all the great work you're doing, and please keep it up.
Will do. Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. The filibuster this week by Senator Ted Cruz met with mixed reviews. The filibuster is a mechanism that was created by our forefathers for stalling a vote and making a political point. It has been a useful tool throughout political history. It was created long before the age of social media, 24/7 news, and telephones. This week, in a vote to defund national health care, i.e. Obamacare, the filibuster became a caricature of itself, and the leadership that is supposedly running our country became an even larger caricature of themselves to the entire world. The issue that continues to be forgotten by U.S. citizens, their elected officials, and the media is that the whole world is watching the leadership fiasco in Washington. The risk is not whether Obamacare is defunded or not. They'll simply print the difference for any financial shortfalls. The real difference is much larger. That risk is an accelerated loss of confidence in U.S. leadership, which could translate into an overnight loss of confidence in the financial system. Analysis of what could become the potential trigger for the next economic crash often focuses on systemic cracks like debt, derivatives, unemployment, and inflation. But what if the next crash was triggered by the cumulative effects of what appears to the rest of the world as an unacceptable level of out-of-touch incompetence? Is that too harsh an analogy? I think not. For example, we're having a debate about defunding national health care, a bill that was passed and signed 3.5 years ago, a bill containing over 2,500 pages that no one read in its entirety, and very few fully understand yet today, a bill of unprecedented cost and enforcement, a bill that purports to solve one set of ailments by creating a whole new financial disease. The rest of the world has problems too, many of which are far worse than those in the U.S. But at some point, are one too many countries around the world going to look at the U.S. all at the same time and say, "Are you nuts?" I'm talking about countries that hold much of our debt in the form of dollars. I'm talking about a loss of confidence that could easily be triggered by staged political theater. The snake that bites you isn't the one you see. It's the one you don't see. The lone snowflake that causes the avalanche flutters through the air on a beautiful sunny day. Too many people only notice things after they've happened, instead of anticipating or observing things while they are happening. The financial system isn't backed by gold or silver anymore. It is only backed by confidence. Applied leadership is the only thing that can help maintain that confidence. And right now, that kind of leadership is in very short supply. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.